So, I grew up in Columbia, South Carolina. I tend to be a zoo veterinarian, taking care of polar bears and tigers after spending a night at the zoo with a friend of my dad's. And, that was super cool when you were 14. Putting an IV in a polar bear is definitely something you want to do again. And then I sat down with my grandmother, my mom's mom, in her kitchen when I was about 14, and she said, no, you're not going to do that. You're going to be a pastor, or you're going to be a doctor, a person doctor. Get a dog. And I was at that stage of my life, which was a prolonged stage of my life, where I listened to what other people thought I should be doing. And I knew I didn't want to be a pastor. Turns out that I'm kind of interested in that now, but I wasn't then. And I said, okay, I'll be a doctor. So it's a very linear course to be a doctor. It's a very boring course. This school, that school, that school, that school. If you've met many of them, you don't really want to talk to them very long, because it is just, they don't have a really very interesting trajectory of life. It's very, very linear. So I went through all these schools. I ended up here in 2001, and I knew I wanted to do something that allowed me to do a little bit of everything. Cardiology seemed to fit the bill. I didn't want to be a surgeon, but I loved procedures. I enjoyed procedures. And cardiology has them. I did things like heart catheterization and transseptal echo and, things that you can do with your hands that are kind of fun. And I got to do enough of that, but it wasn't just that. I got to do acute care, which was exciting. The ER site work where somebody's dying, actively dying in front of you, and, you're it. It's kind of weird to say that was fun. It was exciting. And it worked. I mean, a lot of times you really did save someone's life, which is, makes it a good day. But not all the time. And so that was interesting. I really enjoyed being in the office with patients, and sort of that chronic care too. I mean, I had patients that I had seen for 20 years at the end of my cardiology career. And, I knew them well. I knew their families. I became, in addition to being a cardiologist, I was handed the lipid clinic, the cholesterol clinic, by Kent Salisbury. Some of you may know Kent, one of my senior partners who moved to California, kind of the black sheep of our practice. And a really interesting man in so many ways. And I felt that it was probably punishment that he gave me the lipid clinic, because it was essentially the statin intolerance clinic, because people were having so many side effects with some of their medications, particularly the statins, which we can talk about at length if you'd like. And I decided that I don't know really anything more than anyone else in my practice about lipids, about cholesterol and lipidology. So I became board certified in lipidology in 2008. And it's a 10-year certification. I chose not to recertify because I found it to be incredibly dry. But it was interesting. I mean, you can't know cholesterol without having some interest in what people eat. But it wasn't, it was kind of in the background. I was mostly the guy who knew about how the different statins were metabolized through the different pathways in the liver, and which ones had the longest half-life, and which ones you might tolerate if you didn't tolerate this one, and why, and cross-reactivity with the other drugs you were taking, which were a lot. Most of my patients, a lot of my patients would come in the hospital on no meds, have a heart attack, get a stent, go home, and then be on a bunch. Aspirin, Plavix, statin, ACE inhibitor, beta blocker, these days more and more. It would be rare for someone to come in the hospital and not leave with at least a 5. And that's we'll talk more about that, but that's the problem, because people don't know what happened. They don't know what they're on, and they don't know what the side effects are, and they just don't know what they don't know. And we do a very poor job of explaining to them and preparing them for that discharge process. And they have no idea of what they can do themselves to make themselves better. It's just a really, it's a sad, sad experience for both physicians, providers, and for the patients and the families. So around 2013-ish, I had been practicing now at this time for about 12 years and was kind of getting the hang of it. 2013, I would have been 45. That's the peak of your career, right? You're not old fashioned yet, but you're practiced. So I, as is often the case with these life changing events, you don't see them coming. I had an epiphanic meeting with a patient named George, about that time, who spent half the year in Cleveland, Ohio, and half the year in Black Mountain. An unusual, I mean, most of the patients who were half were in Florida for the other half and not Cleveland. But he was a lovely man. He was probably 65. He was a businessman. He was recently retired. And he had had two open heart surgeries for bypass surgery in his life. He had a five-vessel bypass at some point in the past. And it eventually worked for some period of time. And the problem with these bypasses is that you don't fix the, you don't really get to the root of the problem. And you'll be back. So at this point, I was aware, certainly, that everybody I saw sort of had the same thing. I mean, I would have created a stamp. These days it would be a dot word phrase, you know, so you can just speak it and it just happens. But back then when I started, it would have been a rubber stamp. Cardiovascular disease, obesity, diabetes, dyslipidemia, and hypertension. I mean, those things, they all go together, not always in the same person, but we saw those patients over and over. And I would stent someone in 2001. They'd come back in 2007 with another stent. They'd come back in 2010 with a bypass surgery. They'd come back in 2015 with a stent of one of the bypass grafts. It's just sort of the natural history of the disease as we currently have it set up. So George had had two bypasses, two open heart surgeries. They didn't work. He was very, he cried in the office. He said it had been recommended to him at the Cleveland Clinic, interestingly, that he have a third bypass surgery. And he was coming to see me for a second opinion, which is just, you know, weird, because Cleveland Clinic doesn't send Asheville their second opinions. We send them patients for a second opinion. It doesn't happen the other way, but it did happen the other way this time. And so, as fate would have it, I had a book in my office that a patient had given me some years ago. She was an interesting lady too. And she had had bypass surgery and had really just changed a lot of things about her lifestyle. She was a big runner, very thin, healthy lady. Unfortunately, has some problems with dementia in late life. But she gave me this book called Prevent Reverse Heart Disease by Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn. And I was really, I read it. I was not completely on board. It advocated what I would call a strict diet of a whole food, plant-based, completely plant-based, no animal products, vegan, if you will, diet with no added salt, oil, or sugar. And that is a heavy lift for most people. Yeah, especially, you know, in this sort of part of the country or world even. And I, you know, as I'm talking to the guy, he said, I'm here because I am having angina, reversible chest pain, on a daily basis, and I'm taking nitroglycerin under the tongue, spray or tablet, to alleviate that discomfort, probably 3, 4, 5 times a day. I take nitro. And it's been this way for a little while. And Cleveland has told me that I need another bypass surgery. What do you think? And, you know, he also asked me, have you had any patients who had a third bypass surgery? And I told him at the time that yes, I had, that I had two who had had a repeat, as we call it. And he asked, of course, how they're doing, and I had to tell him honestly that both of them were deceased. At that point, you've used up, when you have bypass surgery, generally there's nuances, but the 95% of the time, you're going to have your breastbone, your sternum sawed open, and your chest open so that we can get to the heart. And we're going to take, you've got blockages in your heart arteries, and we are literally going to divert the blood flow around the blockage. So this, we're bypassing the blockage. And we can do that with arteries and veins. We can do that with the arteries in your chest wall. We can do it with the arteries in your wrist. The radial artery here is often used because you have dual blood supply to your hand. You can take one out. You still have a circle in your hand. So it kind of, it works. And we, of course, use the veins in your legs. And what we do is we poke a hole in the aorta. The heart's here, and then the aorta comes out kind of like a candy cane, gives up all your blood vessels to your head and your neck and then to your organs and your legs. It's the main pipe, if you will. And we poke a hole in it, and we plug one end of this tube in there, and we plug the other end of the tube downstream from the blockage. So the blood goes out of the heart through the hole, down the bypass, around your blockage, and plugs back into your heart artery downstream. When you use a vein, you're asking a vein to become an artery. You're asking a vein to serve as an artery, which works okay. But again, if you don't, I mean, if you don't do something to address the process that got you here in the first place, you know, you get some time. It's going to work for a while until that clogs up. So my patients who had had three beats, two of them, they were complex patients and not terribly, one of them was not very healthy to start with, had some other long-term issues. And they had some relief of their symptoms for about 3 or 4 years, and then they started having more symptoms and then succumbed to that. So, you know, it was kind of a downer discussion. But I had this book, and I said, well, you know, you can, why don't you read this book? I mean, you got nothing to lose. You got stable symptoms. There's no urgency here. I know you're dissatisfied with your quality of life, but let's give you this book and let's just see you back in 3 months. If things get worse, we are, that's what we do. I mean, we're sort of the emergency docs. If you have an urgent need and you develop what we call unstable angina, you know, chest pain arrest, chest pain waking you up, and it's not always with exertion, then let me know and we can rethink this. So I sent him off with the book. And he came back 3 months later, and I remember it vividly. I mean, I remember the two things I remember as, I mean, just seared into my brain were when George walked back into my office 3 months later and when Brian Ling was shot in his office and killed in his office. For those of you who remember Brian Ling, one of the most brilliant nephrologists that you can in this state, was murdered by a patient. So I remember both of those events, one with joy and one with sadness. And so George came back in, and he was completely a different-looking man. And this was a 65-year-old guy who looked 75 when I sent him out with the book. And he comes back in, he looks 55. And I thought, what in the world? This is going to be really interesting. So he walks in, I said, how you doing? He said, Brian, I think you've changed my life. Which is not something that you typically hear as a provider in the current healthcare system. You get some, you know, mostly complaints about, I feel worse since I saw you last time, which is tough. So I said, well, tell me about it. He said, you know, I've lost 20, since changing my diet, and he went all in. He was eating a very standard American diet, which is kind of shocking after two bypass surgeries, and went with both feet in to this just way different way of eating. Completely different. And he said, I've lost 27 pounds in 3 months, which is a lot of weight loss in 3 months. But it was great. It wasn't the goal, but it was a good benefit. His cholesterol had dropped 100 milligrams per deciliter, 100 points. Now, I was a lipidologist at the time, and this was prior to these new meds, you know, the shots that you may have heard about, PCSK9s, lots of shots these days, you know, for everything. And they worked quite well, but we didn't have that back then. And so I had not seen a response like that. And I was able to discontinue one of his cholesterol medicines. And I was able to reduce the dose of his statin by 75%, which was a big deal. But the thing that blew me away was he said, within a week of changing my diet, I have not had any angina. I have not taken a single nitroglycerin pill. And I'm walking on a treadmill at for 30 minutes a day at this speed and at this incline. I can't remember the details of that. But so I thought, well, I had a lot of questions. I mean, it was definitely one of those moments that I knew that this was going to change things for me, or you can ignore it. And I just had a lot of questions, like what in the world? What is the mechanism of action of that? Is that representative of what we see when people make these sort of changes in their lives? How do I get this message out to everybody else? I mean, what is this? How does this affect my practice? Just a lot of questions. So I got very curious about this. I did what everybody else does. I Googled, you know, that whole food plant-based nutrition, and found some information, and it ultimately led me to the American College of Lifestyle Medicine website. That was a new organization at the time. It started around 2013 or 2014. It was right then. And we had several thousand dollars given to us every year for continuing education. It was a use it or lose it sort of thing, and you don't want to lose it, you know. They had a couple of programs, and one they advertised, and one was called CHIP, the Complete Health Improvement Program. It's now called PIDIO, P-I-D-I-O. And it was a lifestyle medicine program. I said, what is lifestyle medicine? And so I ended up administering this program after work, a couple of days a week. And it was very interesting. It was mostly centered around plant-based nutrition, but it also was centered around stress management and physical activity. I wasn't really in the lifestyle medicine mindset yet, but you know, I knew that there was maybe more than nutrition that was going to be valuable. And interestingly, I was, as you can imagine, I was doing this after work. There were a lot of days where I just didn't feel like doing that. I mean, I wanted to just go home. Yeah, I was tired. It was a long day. And it's been a 10-hour day already. And what happened was that for me, I was drained going into these events, these meetings, and I was just filled up when I left. I mean, I was ready. I could be on call all night again. And for me, it's just a big energy thing. I mean, I pay attention to how does it feel? You know, get out of your head a little bit and just get into your body more. Am I feeling like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing? And so I paid attention to that and I said, I need to be doing this. And so I brought the Ornish Lifestyle Medicine Program to Asheville in 2016. Well, I didn't bring it to us. I mean, somebody else's idea, and I thought it was a good idea and said, yes, let's do it. And so we did, and we were the first intensive cardiovascular rehab program in North Carolina in 2016. And we'll talk more about that in a minute, but what I experienced, what I heard patients say, both through CHIP and Ornish, was a couple of things. Number one, this is the best I've ever felt in my life, which was not something that people were telling me in my cardiology clinic. And they also said, why has my doctor never told me this before? Which was, you know, a fairly obvious answer, I think, but it was a little bit of a challenge. Like, why don't you go tell people this? But they, you know, it's not what we're taught. It's not how we're taught. It's not the system that we built. And that's the answer. So, you know, how do we change the system? I started getting excited about that. In 2017, I became board certified in lifestyle medicine. It was the first exam for lifestyle medicine, was in 2017. It was hard. I mean, you had to study for that test just like you would have to study for anything. And I learned quite a lot. And I'm proud to say that I have certificate number one in the world, which was interesting because I didn't realize that. I was walking through the symposium, the test is on the last day, and I heard somebody saying, number one, number one. And I knew this guy's name is Stephen. And I thought, you know, who is he yelling at? I mean, he's a big presence. And I thought, Stefan, man, what are you doing? And then I realized as he was getting closer and closer to me, I'm the only one he could talk to because there's no one around me. I said, what are you talking about? He said, you know, if you pass this test, no pressure, you're going to be at certificate number one. Which just frankly means that I was the first person to sign up for it. I happened to be reading the email when it came out, said, oh, I'll do it. I got extra money. I'm interested. So it was kind of fun. There's about 3,000 people now who are board certified in lifestyle medicine. So it's having its moment. So, you know, I because of that energy shift, truly, I enjoyed doing practicing lifestyle medicine within the system. I mean, if you came to see me in my clinic, I was going to talk to you with a different lens about how you might take care of your problems, and maybe you can get off some of these medications. And you really need these things. But I ended up leaving cardiology in 2020. It was a kind of a perfect storm. Maybe this was a planned exit. It happened to be COVID. It happened to be the HCA taking over our healthcare system. And not by planning to leave before both of those things happened, but it did feel a little bit like divine intervention that it was a nice time to go. And so I have remained as the medical director for the cardiac rehab program. HCA did get rid of the owners program because it wasn't making enough money. It was making money, but just not making a lot of money. And we now have a Pritikin program, which I think is also quite good. It is not a reversal diet. It's more of a Mediterranean diet, which is good for prevention. I don't think there's a lot of data for reversal, but I think it's certainly a reasonable diet. At least that got the standard American diet, SAD, S-A-D. So I've enjoyed that very much. We have a clinical trial going. But I did miss the Ornish experience. I just want to share one more thing about that Ornish experience with you because I think it's really important. Ornish let me go back just a second. Traditional cardiac rehab is an exercise program. It is an exercise-only program. I'm sure some of you have probably been through this program. It is exercise. It's the only way you can get paid for by your insurance provider, whether it's CMS, Medicare, or other Blue Cross Blue Shield or whatever. And you get some educational sessions, but that focuses exercise. So intensive cardiovascular rehab focuses on exercise plus nutrition, plus stress management, healthy mindset, positive psychology, sort of the other pillars of lifestyle medicine, which we are going to come to. And the Ornish experience was transformational to me. It was another one of those things that I didn't see coming. There are four pieces to Ornish. You come through that program as a cohort of a 12. And first was nutrition. It, again, was very similar to Esselstyn. It was a whole food plant-based diet with a couple of exceptions. Ornish allowed egg whites, but not egg yolks because of the cholesterol content. We can talk about that if you wish. I don't think it had much to make much difference, frankly, now that we know this. And he allowed no fat dairy. So you could have no fat Greek yogurt or no fat sour cream or no fat cheese, which, you know, no fat Greek yogurt is okay, but no fat cheese is sort of a waste of time. You might as well just not eat cheese. There's a lot of good plant-based cheeses out there, but they're higher in fat too. So it's a, you know, it's a balance. That was interesting. We would feed people and we would lecture them, talk to them about nutrition. And that was part number one. I felt like I sort of checked the box. I kind of knew. I didn't feel like an expert necessarily, but I was comfortable with that information. The other piece was exercise, because you can't get paid unless you do the exercise component. And I felt like I was pretty knowledgeable there as well. The third leg of the stool of four was stress management. I was not an expert there. I needed some help with the stress management piece myself. I was not a nervous wreck, but I could see nervous wreck coming. You know, 45-ish, young kids, wife's a doctor. There's just a lot going on. And trying to do it all really well. I'm also a competitive achiever, Enneagram 3, which for those of you in the Enneagram world know that's sort of an albatross, and that can go south fast. So I was ready for the stress management part. So in Cornish, the stress management was meditation and hatha yoga, gentle yoga, nothing hard. And I was able to participate in all of those as the medical director. I barely had time, but I could occasionally, I would go have lunch with them. Occasionally, I would go speak with them. Occasionally, I would walk on the track with them. Occasionally, I would do meditation or yoga with them. I'm talking very occasionally, like once a quarter. And then the fourth part was group, what he calls group support. And the group support piece was the surprise piece for me. In group support, it was 12 people sitting with a licensed professional counselor or a licensed clinical social worker. It could have been any sort of, you know, mental health provider, someone trained in therapy. And I could not, as a medical director, be there. So what happened in group stayed in group. But what happened in group was that people, it was really some magic. If people would share, authentically and vulnerably what really scared them the most. And there's a lot that comes up, as you can imagine. I mean, when you've had sudden cardiac death and you've been resuscitated, that stirs the pot, brings up a lot of old trauma as well. And sometimes you don't, it's so deeply buried, you don't even know that if you didn't, you forgot it was there. Cardiac transplant was really an interesting one. You know, when you don't even have your own heart, you have somebody else's heart in your chest, that brings up a lot. So any of this stuff brings up a lot. I mean, it's your first, for a lot of these people, it's your first brush with mortality, and you start to see things a little bit differently. You know, what am I working so, what am I so single-mindedly fixated on that this has happened to me, and what is the message here for me? So when we did exit interviews on our patients, you know, what do you think about the program? What do you think about the individual components of the program? Which one was most important to you? 94% of people said group support. Okay. Now, I didn't see that coming, I'll be honest. I didn't see it coming. I didn't see it. I didn't see it at all. And so that was a lesson to me that there's something that's important for that, about that, that I need to pay attention to myself. And Dean says it well, Dean Ornish. He says it's about eat better, move more, stress less, love more. That's the love more piece, which is the glue that keeps it all together and lets the other stuff sort of happen. So that was important. So I left cardiology in 2020. I left on a Friday. It was a tearful goodbye. But I knew I was doing the right thing. I, on Monday, 3 days later, was already working on the next thing, Enneagram 3, coming back strong. And I tried to make it work with this. We had this vague idea of a lifestyle medicine company called Ruckus Health, creating a ruckus in the healthcare space. I loved the name. I loved the idea. It was me. It was a friend of mine from Davidson. He's a neurosurgeon in Charlotte. His friend was an MBA, and another woman who was sort of the shaman of every of it. And it was clunky, and it was more of a no one really knew what they were doing. We had no business expertise. It was never going to really be a business, but it's fun, and we learned a lot. We explored all those pillars, and I ended up leading that. And then was the chief medical officer for a healthcare startup company called Love Life. It was led by John Mackey. John was the CEO of Whole Foods Markets for 42 years, sold it to Amazon for a lot, $13.4 billion. He didn't get all that money, but he was fine financially. And he said, would you come be the chief medical officer for this? And I said yes, because I felt like it was going to be perfect. You know, he is John Mackey. He's got a bunch of money. He knows people with a bunch of money. He's got a little bit of a platform. He's got a name. He's got the right idea. And he's quite a salesman too. I mean, I said no once, and I said yes the second time. And I did that for about a year and a half, and I ended up leaving that too a year ago because I didn't like it. I did it because I wanted to help. I wanted to scale this concept. I wanted the more people. In my mind, it was the more people you can help, the better. And why not just go national and help everybody? But I that's a longer story. But I just it was sort of through my meditation experiences. I practice transcendental meditation now. It's not. I mean, you can practice whatever meditation works for you, but that was what worked for me. I just kept getting these little signals that this isn't what you're supposed to be doing. This isn't what you're supposed to be doing, which is a little confusing because you're like, you know, this has got to be what I'm supposed to be doing. It's what I'm doing. So I fought that for a bit, and then I left that a year ago and decided that I would do something else, which is not still completely clear. But I do enjoy talking, obviously, without stop for 35 minutes, to groups of people who are interested in this sort of thing. Two more things that come up for me. Lifestyle medicine, what is that? So lifestyle medicine focuses on six pillars, and they are nutrition, predominantly whole plant-based foods. We'll talk all about that. Physical activity, you got to move more. Stress management. You gotta stress less, doesn't matter how you do it. Toxin avoidance, which is mostly tobacco, excess alcohol use, you could argue potentially any alcohol use, environmental toxins. Excuse me. The fifth pillar is sleep. If you're not sleeping well, you really don't have the energy to bring to bear on these other things. Sleep apnea, be the biggest one, I think, for a lot of people. And then the sixth part is social connection. And I really do see these as fitness areas. And there's a physical fitness, there's a mental, emotional fitness, and then there's a social fitness. And it's sort of that apex of the pyramid. And it's easier to talk about social than spiritual. But for me, I'll be honest, I mean, that social piece and the connection piece is the spiritual piece. Because none of us, you're having your experience of this, and I'm having my experience of this, but, we're connected in ways that I think we don't understand. Most of us don't understand. So I like those things. I think that I get it that the toxin avoidance piece is important, but it's the part that I enjoy talking about the least because it's just pretty clear. It's mostly clear, that's bad for you. And there's some other pieces that I might put in there. I might put in there something like purpose. I think that might be a pillar. When I start thinking about the blue zones, for example, we can talk about that. Purpose was one of their, I'd say, pillars. They had nine sort of things, and one of them was purpose. And they looked at all those areas around the world where people were living to be thriving centenarian 100-year-old people. They were living with purpose, added about 7 years of life on average to someone in the blue zones. So I think that's important, and I would probably add that to those pillars. The other point, one more point about Ornish that I want you to know about. Ornish and Esselstyn are the only people who have data around cardiovascular disease reversal. And what I mean by that is taking cholesterol out of the heart arteries. Ornish, back in 1990, published his study that he randomized. He took patients who had had diagnostic angiography, a heart cath, where they scored the dying heart arteries and take X-ray pictures. And they found on average about a 40% blockage. So, moderate cholesterol buildup in the heart arteries. And they randomized into two groups. One group had optimal medical therapy, which usually included aspirin back then, beta blocker, an ACE inhibitor. 60% were on statins because statins were just sort of coming into vogue. Today, that number would be like 95% or higher would be on statins. My bonus as a cardiologist was tied to the number of patients that were on statins when they left the hospital. And I had a stretch goal. So 95% you get this, and 98% you get that. Because it was guideline-directed medical therapy, GDMT. Those are initials every cardiologist does. Guideline-directed medical therapy. And if you weren't doing that, you weren't practicing guidelines. So that's the idea. So I get it. I get the idea. was not really very well cared out. And the other group got no medicines, nothing, not even an aspirin. And they got the owner's program for 9 weeks. You met for 4 hours a day on Tuesdays and Thursdays, 8 hours a week for 9 weeks, a total of 72 hours. And that was your intervention. And he did another heart cath on all those patients 5 years later. At the end of 5 years, the optimal medical therapy group on all the things had 28% more cholesterol buildup in their heart arteries. The Ornish group on no medications, but just a 9 week program, lifestyle medicine program, had 8% less cholesterol buildup in their heart arteries. And, you know, some people say, well, who cares about an 8% less? And that's not cardiovascular disease reversal. I mean, you can, yeah, I mean, I think it's a dumb argument, but we can have it. I mean, it is less. By any stretch, it's less. It's not like it's dissolved, but it's less. And you have to compare it to the way more.
Yeah.
And as a clinical cardiologist, I honestly don't care whether you have a 30 or 35% or 40% blockage in your heart arteries, and you shouldn't either. You should care about, does it impact my quality of life, and is it going to cut short my life? And when you look at that data in those two groups, the optimal medical therapy group on optimal anti-angina medications had 165% increased angina at 5 years. The Ornish group on no medicines had 90% less angina at 5 years. And they were 2.5 times less likely to have what we call major adverse cardiovascular events, heart attack, stroke, bypass surgery, or cardiovascular attack. So, you know, it worked better. You felt better. You lived longer. You're on nothing. You know, how could that not be standard of care? Well, I mean, you can, you know, you're smart people.
Big pharma.
Right? You know, it's not, I don't mean it cynically. I mean, I can get cynical about it, but it doesn't serve anybody to be a cynical about it. It's just, you can't go into a meeting with a bunch of pharmaceutical people and be cynical. It's not going to go anywhere. Or hospital administrators. You just have to say, you know, this doesn't make sense. I mean, if you were the patient or your wife or loved one were the patient and you believe that this data were true, first of all, do you know the data? Second of all, do you believe it to be true? And third of all, if yes and yes, then what do you think is your obligation?
Follow the money.
The job that you're doing. Sorry, was there a question back there?
Follow the money.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, yes. So, it is the system that we've built, is all dependent on that. And it is just what it is. I mean, I wish it were different too. And we have to change it or we're gonna, you know, there's no light at the end of the tunnel unless it changes. So I think the importance with all of this is, number one, the healthcare system, and it's not surprising it would be here in this class, the healthcare system is broken beyond repair. It is a political mess. Nobody has the answer. Nobody wants to really even dive into the answers. Political suicide. So it has to change, and it's going to take time. And the first stage, I think, is education. I mean, you need to go know that yourselves, and you need to be empowered to change things for yourselves and recognize the power that you do have to change things for yourselves. Yes, it requires some action on your part. It is easier to take a medicine. And I'm not saying that there's no role for medicines. Okay, let me be clear about that. I'm not saying stop all your medicines and start eating only plants and exercise. That might be what you want to do, and that's great. If it is, please talk to your provider about that and have that conversation. Maybe there's a weaning process. I mean, there's lots of subtleties to how that is best carried out. But I think the first step is education, not just for you, but for your providers. I mean, it's sort of train the trainers. Once you get the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, membership is going up like this. It's a super steep curve. And the more trainers we get out there, and to some degree, it's the newest people that I'm most interested in. I mean, it's the people coming out, it's the med students and the residents who I really enjoy talking to the most. I enjoy talking to anybody, but the 65-year-old I'm going to retire next month guy just doesn't have a lot of, it's not, I mean, great, but, you know, there's just not as much scale. So talking to those new providers is the key. Then the second stage for you, if you are educated about this stuff, is you got to integrate it. It's not, lifestyle medicine isn't about what you know. Ultimately, it's about what you do. So you can know all day long, but if you're not eating differently, moving more, stressing less, or, you know, working on your sleep, whatever it is that you need to work on, it isn't going to happen. And so that's important. And then the third leg of the stool, I think, is the infrastructure to support that. You know, what is the built environment that you are in that is going to nudge you into making right decisions, support the changes that you want to make in your health? Because as we all know, it's not a perfect world. And when you leave here, you're inundated by fast food restaurants and, you know, all the things that are going to sabotage all the changes you want to make. So you need to construct a support network that is going to support you in those efforts. So those are the three legs, I think: education, integration, and ongoing community support. I think Asheville, or this area, you know, Western North Carolina, is well positioned, you know, to make these sort of changes. I mean, we're sort of fiercely independent. I don't know that we sometimes always work together as a group that well. I think we do in many cases, but I think, you know, it's sort of fierce independence, but we're self-sufficient. You know, we like that we grow our food. A lot of us, you know, we have a community supported agricultural programs around here. I was a board member, president of the board for ASAP for a long time. And that was, I mean, we were ready to do this kind of stuff. We just have to get, and it takes money. I mean, truthfully, it takes some money to support it. We have the Dogwood Health Trust, which could be a good thing to come out of the hospital sale. To support that, that's, you know, we need to have that machine working maybe a little more with more agility. So, you know, that's kind of where we are. And I, you know, we've gone through about half our time. So let me just stop talking for a minute. And, I mean, you kind of know where I am. I think that... From an advocacy standpoint, I think it's important that you, you probably know all this already and have talked or will talk about all this, but you have more power than you think. If you don't care and you're going to advocate responsibility of any of this to your provider, that's what you're going to get. You get what you ask for, honestly. And you will get a lot of medicines in not much time. And that's kind of the system, right? It's going to be hard to get in to see the doctor or the provider. You're not going to get a lot of time when you do see them. And you're going to pay some price for that, I think. I mean, literally, you're going to be on a lot of medicines. It's going to be expensive. If you have interest in this, it does require some action on your part. I mean, whatever your disease process is, take cardiovascular disease, for example, you need to understand what that is. What exactly did happen to me? It's shocking to me. The number of patients who I still talk to patients with this on. I do it for free. And I'm, by the way, happy to be a resource for anybody here. Getting to have my cell phone, my email. I'm happy to talk to you on the phone. I'm happy to go get coffee. I'm happy to have lunch with you. I'm happy to talk to you anytime and say, you know, one-on-one, you know, pro bono. I think that you have to study it. You have to understand it. Patients don't know. They come and see me and they're like, I, what's going on with you? Well, I think I had a heart attack, and then they put in a stent, and maybe my heart muscle squeezing function's weakened. I'm like, holy smokes. I have no idea. It's not your fault, but we gotta help you figure it out. The first stage is you've got to understand what's going on. What do you have? What is the process that caused it? Knowing what caused it is going to help you get unwinded, right? Lifestyle is the cause of most of our chronic diseases. About 80% of our chronic diseases, because we don't eat right, we don't move, we don't manage stress, and it's also the cure, right? I mean, if we can unwind that and start doing those things, then you're to sort of back out of this thing if you can. It's harder to back out when you've had, you know, the end stage. It is harder. So it requires a heavier dose, but it's still doable. Ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So you got to know what's going on, and then you got to have a plan. You got to have somebody, somebody's going to help you be successful. You know, a family member, a healthcare provider, you know, ideally. But you know how hard that is. We've talked about that already. Some of us one-on-one. So you got to have a, plan. You got to know, you got to have a plan, and you got to go in there with a list of questions, and you got to say, doc, they look like they're in a hurry. Well, good to see you again. Wait. I got some questions. They're not going to look happy. They're going to have one hand on the doorknob, and you're going to say, I'll make them quick. I have four questions. These are the questions. And ask them. And always, always make sure you go over your medications with your provider and you know what you're on, you know what it's for, and you know whether or not you can come off of it at any time. And if you can come off, what do I need to do to get off of that is a very legitimate question. What do I need to do to get off of that? And just start to peel them back. And it ain't going to happen if you don't know what the heck's going on. And you gotta put yourself out there and say, my time is as valuable as yours. These are my questions. Okay, now I really am gonna sit. Yes.
Wait.
We see advertisements, I think, in the paper and on TV for a service that will check your veins or your arteries for. Is that a good service? Is it worth the money?
Yeah. So I think what you're referring to is this sort of like almost a band. It checks everything. They ultrasound your carotid arteries. They do an ankle brachial index to look at your blood flow to your legs. Quick ultrasound of your heart. They just ultrasound basically everything. I do think it is a reasonable thing to consider doing. It is a bargain. You know, that's an inexpensive way to get some things checked. I would always ask myself when I do anything like that, what am I going to do with these results? If the answer is I am doing this because I am going to take action if I find something wrong, then you should, you know, it's a very reasonable thing to do. Yeah. That's the short answer. Yeah.
Can I add on one thing?
Sure.
We just started, I and my husband,
I'm happy to repeat the question.
Locations of hopscotch.
Yes.
Are you familiar with hopscotch?
I am. She and her husband are patients of hopscotch, which is a primary care clinic in town. I've heard of them, but I don't know exactly how they're different from everyone else.
They do only Medicare patients, and they have a program with Medicare that they give 24, they give complete. They're on call 24 hours.
Okay, so a direct primary care type situation. So they only take Medicare patients and they're sort of available to you 24/7. Does that mean that if you call them on Saturday, you're actually going to speak to that person? Does it work?
I'm going to speak to somebody in hospital.
Somebody's going to answer the phone. That's a step in the right direction for sure. I am a big proponent of this idea of what we call direct. Do you pay a fee for that or is that insurance only?
It's just okay.
I am a fan, and that's great. I am a fan of this concept of direct primary care. For those of you who are familiar with that DPC, where you pay it is membership. You do pay a small monthly fee. It's not for everyone. I get it. It's about $90 a month. I would say is the average around here, and you get 24/7 care like you're describing to your directly to the doc. I mean, if I was your doctor, my cell phone, you have my number, you just call me and say, hey, Brian, I've got this, and I have a chest pain, what should I do? That's a good system. It's just a little more, it's not going to be applicable to everyone because of the money, which is a problem, but it does work well.
What would you recommend that we read some kind of book or something that help us understand this lifestyle medicine?
Great question. There are a number of them. I am a big fan for this sort of lifestyle medicine 101. I'm a big fan of Dr. Ornish, O-R-N-I-S-H. Dr. Dean, D-E-A-N, Dean Hornish, wrote a book called Undo It.
What's the name?
Undo It. You know, like the Undo It button on your computer.
When you send the email, you're like, oh, oh, no, that energy's just gone. Yeah. I talked it to death.
Thanks. Undo It is a good book. I think that's a good, you know, it's a high-level book. It's interesting. There are a number of subsectional books. There's a great book on sleep called Why We Sleep by Dr. Matthew Walker. Why We Sleep, Matt Walker. That's a great book on sleep. I recommend that to all my patients who are having any issues with their sleep. There are a number of nutritional books that are good. That's all over the map. I think that Dr. Greger, G-R-E-G-E-R, Michael Greger, G-R-E-G-E-R, has written a number of books called How Not to Die, How Not to Diet. Just look up How Not to Anything. And those are very good. Gives you it's a very strong plant slant. Let me just reiterate that I do not think that, I am not saying that you have to be a raw food vegan to be successful here. It depends on what's going on. I mean, if you are trying to reverse vascular disease, then I would, you know, say these are the data that have shown that you can do this, and this is going to require a lot of effort. If you are in prevention mode and you're healthy and there's nothing wrong, you just want to stay that way for a long time, then you can do that. That's great. But you might also choose something, you know, a little bit easier for most people, like the Mediterranean diet might be appropriate. We could talk about that. But those are get you started on books, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. I'm interested in physicians that specialize in lifestyle medicine that use take Medicare.
Yes.
Is there a list of doctors that are taking patients that do that?
Not necessarily they're taking patients, but if you go to lifestylemedicine.org, lifestylemedicine.org, and there is at the top, there is a, like, I don't know what it's called, but there's a tab that is physician, find a physician.
Yeah.
And you can search by your zip code or, you know, whatever. And you can make a 25, 50, 200-mile radius. And you will find those providers who are certified in lifestyle medicine. And you can see what they are. Cardiologist, family practice, internal medicine, and whatever. And you could always just call. They have their website or phone number on there. And you could call them. At least look them up on Google and see if it looks like it might be a fit. That's where I would start.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes, sir.
Yes, so...
Wait.
Oh, okay. Thank you. By the way, thank you. Excellent. I really appreciate all your pleasures. So let's say you have a traditional doctor, first in his or her class, great, but they're not exposed to the lifestyle medicine. Should you run from that doctor? You know, the first thing is, oh, you need Saturday. You need this. Should you run from that doctor to try to educate them, or what's your reaction?
I would say no. I mean, if you like the doctor, the question I would pose is this someone that I can work with? They're a little heavy-handed on the meds. They might not know the lifestyle medicine stuff, but if they will respect your desire to learn this stuff and to advocate for yourself and say, hey, I really would like to come off of that stuff, or I don't want to be on it at all, and here's why. I'm going to try this. If that's a doctor who would say, look, I know you. I know that's what you want to do. I respect that. I have concerns. I mean, it's not what I would recommend to you for the reasons and whatever reason, but I know you want to do that, so let's give it a shot. You know, you do that. And then let's repeat your whatever lab I'm following or whatever metric it is that I'm trying to target. Let's give it 2 or 3 months. Let's see how it works. And if it's working, then it's working. If it's not working, or at least not to my satisfaction, we can rediscuss it. And you may still say no, but but it's absolutely your right to say no. The doctor does not know everything. I mean, you know, you are the final decision maker on you. So if that doctor is down with that, then I would, and you like them, I keep them. Plus, I would love for them to have the experience of your success. If they're not going to do that, they don't have time for that, then I would find a new doctor.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for speaking.
So what are you doing now with C2Life? What is that?
Yeah, so I am sort of chasing the joy. I am C2Life. I put together a 9-week digital lifestyle program looking at all the pillars. The first week is called Spark, is connecting with the why. Why do you want to make a change? And then there's 7 pillars. There's the 6 that I mentioned, plus I added purpose because I thought it was important. So there's 7 pillars. And then the last week is called Thrive. You know, what do I do now that I've gone through all this, I got educated, and how am I going to move out into the world and be successful in integrating some of these changes I've just learned about? We're in the process. C2Life is a company. There's a for-profit and a non-profit arm. The for-profit arm is a food production company making frozen meals. And for me, they're making frozen plant-based meals that we are giving to patients for the first 2 weeks of that program. As they come in to the program, they're given food, partly because I want them to be able to sort of cleanse their, just, you know, really dive in with healthier food. And partly because I also am checking biometrics, I'm checking labs on those patients at the end of 2 weeks. And I would like to control the outcome as much as I can to get the best data that I can so that I can then go to self-insured businesses, healthcare providers, whoever that market is, and say, this works. Their nonprofit arm, the C2Life Foundation, is all about food and health equity and trying to serve the underserved in our communities. We're in the process of making significant changes to that program. We're taking it from 9 weeks to 6 weeks, and we're getting a little more organized on what that looks like. It is a lot of videos of me, which is okay, but it's not what I see myself doing down the road. I don't want to be the sage from the stage. I would rather be the guy from the side. And I don't mind making appearances, like I'm here, but I don't want to do it. I don't want to just do that. And I don't want to, honestly, I don't want to have to be the expert in keeping up with all the literature, because there are a lot of other things I like to do, and I don't like that burden of having to be the expert. As a competitive achiever, perfection sort of oriented person, it's an albatross. And I recognize that, and I can't do that to myself. So it's a complicated answer to a short question, but I want to see that thing happen. I want it to do well. I don't care about making money. I just want it to, you know, I just want to have the conversation. And I have some other ideas about what I might want to do too, but we'll talk about that later.
Thank you. I have another question. You don't know this, but 2 guys who that I know that went through DeNorish with you through Mission really, really changed their life.
That's awesome.
And through them, you put me on to the book Mastering Diabetes, which I started in 2020, and I've been following ever since. And my problem was my diabetes changed dramatically in the last year, and I went looking for a plant-based lifestyle endocrinologist. And I mean, I really looked. I looked all over the country. Now, there was one guy, Furman, in California that I could go to for $30,000, and then there was Lesnian in D.C. or another guy in D.C., Washington National Hospital. But I didn't find any anywhere. And if I could find somebody that had that slant, they would see me as an out-of-state patient. And it shook my confidence. Like, if after, I started this in 2020, so after 5 years of nobody embracing this that I could find, it gave me pause. You know, like, am I really on the right track here? Now, some things changed for me. I got a new endo, and I'm back to stable, which I wasn't. And I'm still following that plan, But I'm curious as to why. Why nobody has gotten on this that I could tell.
Yeah, I'm also curious about what happened, that things kind of fell off a little bit. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like you didn't change anything. It's kind of the mystery of the whole thing. I mean, things happen to us that, things happen to me that I don't really love. And I'm curious about it, but it's a surrender process for me. I think it's just that, it's just this slow uptake frustration. It's that the patients were changing the system. You know, the ACLM, there's also an American Society of Preventive Medicine, ASPM, that is doing good work, but it's really just a drop in the ocean in some respects. You know, we're growing, but we're growing from 1% of all educated physicians, trained physicians, to 3%. And, you know, it's just spectacular growth, but there's 97% of people who still aren't on board. So, you know, I don't really have a great answer to the dilemma, other than it's just going to take a lot longer than we thought it was going to take. And I don't know how else to do it other than to, it almost has to be someone like, someone in government who has something happen and gets it. And, you know, if you're the Secretary of Health, it would be a different thing. I'd vote for you, by the way. I don't get a vote for that. I don't think you're going to be that person for the next few years. So, you know, I don't know. I hear you. I definitely suffer with you. Yeah. Yes, sir.
So, I lived overseas for 14 years, experienced, single payer. It was a great experience. I was younger. I moved here 18 years ago. And, Mayhek, I have a friend who was trained there. And, I've watched her experience and frustration with, you know, writing a script, no time. So, I was fortunate, you know, first 74 years, I didn't want to take any meds, prescription meds. I didn't sign up for D in the beginning. Everything was going fine until about 14 months ago. And I had an event, a cardiac event. I have paroxysmal, very episodic. I had two before. I had three right in a row. I've been treating hypertension using ACE inhibitor, hibiscus, very successfully for 3 years. And when my GP was not on board, everything was fine. I used to go once a year. I was appalled that the wellness thing was just a drug check. I thought it was crazy. You know? But, you know, it was okay until I needed help. Once I had this episode, it was triggered emotionally. You know, had a lot of some trauma, lost a brother. And I didn't get any help. You know, in fact, there was an adversarial relationship. My blood pressure would go crazy. You know, I'd pop the machine because it was like, well, first of all, I felt like I got ingested by the medical industrial machine. You know, that was 14 months ago. Now I've gotten some good help. I stayed within Mayhek. I did use direct care, which was kind of okay. You know, financially I'm fine, but you know, just the inability to change. One thing I wanted to mention is it is fully possible to have two primary healthcare providers. I think everyone in the room should realize that. And, you know, if you don't, check into it because I did that. I used the direct care integrated behavioral. It was a reasonably good experience. But, you know, then I changed within Mayhek, found someone who was taking a young doctor, very happy with an internist at the Biltmore campus. And again, you know, this person was really tuned in, you know, and very helpful, very responsive. So, and you're talking about stress management. You know, I was very clear to me that my cardiology problem was triggered by my emotions. No doubt in my mind. It goes way back. I went through and, you know, it's just very frustrating. I'm very grateful now that I'm sleeping better now, but I wrote down the book. The information you're giving and the courage that I see in you as a doctor is amazing. Because, you know, and again, with the RN, It's very difficult to be within a system that feels crazy to you, and yet you have to respond appropriately. Because all your colleagues, you know, there becomes adversarial very quickly, which it shouldn't. But really appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments.
One thing I struggle with plant-based diet is when I look at the packaging, a lot of the plant-based food looks like a chemistry lab. It's ultra-processed. And I don't know whether I'm, picking between being hung or shot. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about that. When I say plant-based, what I really am talking about is a whole food plant-based. Whole food is probably more important in some respects than the plant-based part of that conversation. It has to be whole food. There was a study that was published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology in 2017 looking at plant-based ultra-processed foods, and we could debate about what that definition is, but, you know, it involves a lot of things on a label that you don't know what they are. That's an ultra-processed food. I love Dr. Greger's definition of ultra-processed food. Nothing bad, or whole food. Nothing bad was added, and nothing good was removed. That's a whole food. That's a great way to think about whole food. So if you can't read the label, it's wrong. So I'm talking about whole food plant-based foods. The Journal of American College of Cardiology article showed that a ultra-processed plant-based vegan animal products diet was actually increased the risk of cardiovascular disease and possibly even more than the animal protein-based diet. It is the whole foods that are the key. You need to eat it as it was grown. You need to eat all the fiber and all the water. And we could talk on and on about the microbiome, the gut bacteria, and the importance of those guys. I mean, in some ways, you have 10 times more genetic material in the bacteria that live in you and on you than you have in your cells, 10 times more. So in some ways, I mean, it's this symbiotic relationship that's amazing that, in some ways you're just a host. You could argue, right? You're just a host for a bunch of bacteria. It kind of puts you in touch with the world in a different way when you realize that. So I agree with you that stuff, you know, is not serving you best. I wouldn't eat it. I don't think it's a health food. I would just, if it doesn't have a label, that's awesome. You know, in the produce section, it's just, it doesn't need a label. It's a beet, it's a carrot, it's a potato. That's what you want. Put a bunch of anti-inflammatory spices in it. I love ethnic foods. I mean, I love Indian food specifically. I don't like it necessarily spicy hot. I just like the spices. Cardamom, nutmeg, cinnamon, all that stuff. Za'atar, any cool spice blend I'm a fan of trying. And those are remarkably anti-inflammatory. So, get the whole food. You got to learn how to chop. You got to be a little patient. You got to have a lot. You got to just spend a little bit more time in the kitchen prepping. And there's ways around that too. You can batch cook. You can batch prep. You know, do it all on Sundays for 2 hours. There's lots of ways that people do it. My way to do it is turn on some music that you like the most and just make it almost like a meditation. Right. And it's going to take... Right. 20 minutes, and then it's going to cook for 20 minutes, and then everything works out great. Question up here, and then the question way back.
It's great that we're learning how to be medical consumers, to ask questions and to educate ourselves. I'm wondering about lifestyle medicine in schools. When students are in medical school, are there any programs for them to learn about lifestyle? You seem to have gravitated towards it. But I think it would be so beneficial if that was incorporated in their educational process.
Yeah, I like the way you think. So I 100% agree. Scale. There is a friend of mine named Michael Clapper. He's older, he's in his late 70s, maybe 80. He has a group called Moving Medicine Forward, which is doing that, teaching lifestyle medicine, and very high focus on plant-based nutrition in the medical schools, residency programs. The American Council of Lifestyle Medicine is also making big headway there. We have here in Nashville now a lifestyle medicine residency curriculum at MAHEC for the family practice trainees. It needs to be in medical schools. The more proximal we can move it, the better. We just had a man who's he's an attorney, actually, in Waynesville, and he went through our program, the Thrive program that we were talking about, and he said the same thing. He said, this ought to be in the sixth grade. You know, it ought to be. And that's a whole other broken system, the public education system. You know, it's just, we have a lot of challenges. But I'm with you. I mean, it's happening. It's just, it's starting to happen. It's just, it's patience. I waffle back between patience and just losing my mind, I'll be honest. But I feel very patient today, so I'm going to have to get patience.
I took Bonnie Miller's class here at Ollie on Whole Foods, and I have been plant-based for the last 3 years. The preparation, I've been married for over 50 years. I'm kind of tired of cooking, but I do it chop, you know. What I'm concerned about on my diet is that I don't get enough protein, and I have seen a change in my hair and nails. Other than throwing tofu in everything, and I do, you know, as a quick snack, use nuts, and I worry about the fat in the nuts. I don't know what to use for protein. Yeah.
That is a very good question, and a question that only probably someone who's been doing what you've been doing would ask. Protein question comes up quite often, and it is more challenging to meet your protein requirements on a plant-based diet. You'll have other people say that's not the case, and you can do it. I do think it is. I just think you have to pay a little bit more attention to it. Proteins are just a combination of different combinations of 20 building blocks. It's like 26 letters of the alphabet make up all our words. 20 amino acids make up all our proteins. And nine of them are called the essential. You've heard this term, essential amino acids. It just means that you can't produce them and you have to obtain them in your diet. All animal proteins, fish, chicken, whatever, beef, pork, are complete proteins. They all have the nine essential amino acids, and it's just not very hard to get enough of it. In fact, we probably get too much of it. There's some problems with that on your heart, on your kidneys. And plant protein is just easier. It is arguably slightly less bioavailable. It's harder to break it down because it's tied into the fiber in the plants. And it's harder to break it down. Excuse me. So how much protein do you need is sort of one question that should be addressed. And the short answer to that is you probably need about 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight. So I weigh about 80 kilos. I'm actually a little heavier than that right now, but for the math, and because I aspire to be back to 80 kilos, we're going to use that number. So 80 kilograms. And so 0.8 times 8 is 64. I would need about 64 grams of protein to meet the requirements. That this is a recommended dietary allowance. This is the RDA for protein. It's 0.8 per kilogram. That's easy to get. I mean, I'm probably going to get that. As we get older, we sometimes tend to cook the same things over and over, and we don't prioritize the protein, and you got to kind of have it in your brain that you want to get protein at breakfast, lunch, and dinner of some sort. If you're an athlete and you're working to build muscle, you probably need maybe even twice that, up to maybe 1.6 grams per kilogram. That's where it gets a little trickier to get that much protein. What are the plant-based sources of protein that are most useful? Certainly nuts and seeds have a lot of good protein, but they also, like you said, they do have fat, and that's actually, frankly, how I gained some weight was my go-to became handfuls of peanuts, which I love, but there was a lot of calories in those guys, and it was starting to add up for me, so I had to kind of right the ship. Tofu is good. Tempeh is good. All legumes, all beans, peas, and lentils are good. I do think that there's some debate about this, but I do feel that in patients who are not getting their protein requirements, that we might even need to supplement. It would be worthwhile, I think, to use an app, something like Chronometer, some sort of app. There are a number of them, but the one I've used was Chronometer. It allows you to document what you've eaten, and it's a lot of work. I mean, it's just hard to, you know, was it a quarter cup of oats, and how many? You have to start measuring stuff instead of just throwing it in there. But if you do it for 2 days, I did it for 2 days. If you do it for 2 days, I think it's a helpful experience to see specifically how much protein are you getting, and are you getting that 0.8, or are you falling off? And as you get older, you might even need to get more, a little bit more, because you start to lose muscle mass. It's called sarcopenia, sarcomusclepenia, not a lot, like osteopenia is brittle bones, sarcopenia is brittle muscles. You're losing muscle mass. And you tend to lose it as you get older, in part because you're not using it as much. You're not doing the things that you were doing. And so you get atrophy of the muscle. And so you need to be on more protein to build it back up. So you might even need more than this. Maybe even, you know, 1 or 1.2 grams per kilogram. But Chronometer would allow you to look at how much you're getting and then know whether or not you need to get more. I would target, when you try to break that down, like whatever that number is for you, 64 grams a day, try to break it down into equal servings if possible. I'd like us to try to get a third of it, you know, early in the day, a third of the middle of the day, a third of it in the evening. If you only eat two meals, you can split it in half. You don't want to be getting it, you know, all. You're not going to be able to get it all in one meal. If you're short, and if you are just, you know, what else can I do with beans? What can I do? Can I sprinkle hemp hearts? I love hemp hearts. Hemp hearts are a great source of protein. Can I sprinkle them on my salads? Can I put them in my salad dressings? I am an advocate of, I know people disagree with this, some people do, but I'm an advocate of smoothies. You know, if you, I love them. If you can't get enough calories, enough protein in, then I would consider the use of a high quality plant-based protein powder and make a green smoothie out of it. Put a bunch of kale or chard or whatever you want in there, greens, and any greens, it doesn't matter. Greens, a scoop of this protein is about 18 grams per scoop. Some of it's really tasty, and just make sure it's protein in that whey, which is the protein in milk. Make sure it's animal plant protein. And put some fruit in there, sweeten it up, and, you know, have it supplement, have it at breakfast with your oatmeal, or have it at lunch with your whatever, or have it at supper with your, you know, Buddha bowl, or whatever you're eating. There's ways to, but it's kind of a long question, but it's a long answer. It's do the math, know it, know whether you're doing it, and then look for opportunities to supplement. And I hear you, it's hard to, I'm the cook in my house, my wife is the cleaner, I've always been the chef, I enjoy it most of the time, but it is, there are days when you just want to, you know, go somewhere. But there's not some great options here in
the South. You're tempted to buy the frozen products, but the ingredients are...
Lots of added stuff, lots of salt, lots of, yeah, you're better off just eating leftovers. Yeah, chop. Make a playlist, yep.
Yeah, when I was growing up, my metabolism has always been very high. You know, I was one of four. They called me the human garbage can. And I enjoy eating. And therefore, I knew early on, my dad was a great cook. So I enjoy cooking and shopping. So this woman's question and what you've been saying really touched a lot of my buttons in a very positive way. Because again, I have a dishwasher. I don't use it, except maybe twice a year. Because you're talking about meditation and relaxing. You know, to me, I needed a window in front of my sink. I moved the sink into a different room. But those, and also I play music. And you mentioned like putting music on when you're cooking. All those things, you know, I mean, I've never heard a physician say anything like this, you know. So it's really enriching my life. And you talk about support, you know, being in a group like this and hearing, I mean, the information you're going to, you know, I like numbers too. A part of my life, I was an engineer. But to go through the numbers that you just went through, and I've gone through it with friends, like, you know, 64, I got the number, you divide it by 3, it's 20 per, a can of sardines. Now, I'm not a vegan, but like, you know, I mean, stuff, you know, and it's wild caught, hopefully, you know, so I don't know, but it's challenging. And again, I just want to say, you know, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you again. Yeah. Way back in the back.
Oh, yes. Oh. Hi, thank you very much for coming. The question that I have in my head is, you know, there's such a difference between quality of meats, like grass-fed, grass-finished, versus factory-raised.
Yes.
And so I'm not a vegetarian. I used to be, but I never felt well on it. Plus, I'm also a diabetic, so have to be really careful with the carbs. And there's a lot of carbs in vegetables, or at least the root ones. So, I mean, I would love to be able to eat mostly vegetarian, which I kind of eat mostly vegetarian, but I still try to eat, you know, grass-fed, grass-finished, pasture-raised chicken, you know, pastured eggs, the way that possibly our grandparents ate.
Right.
So I just wondered if there'd ever been any studies on the different types of those kind of proteins.
There are. This question is a symposium in itself, I think, honestly. But there's a lot that we could talk about there. From a diabetic standpoint, I think, you know, there's three macronutrients. There's carbs, there's proteins, and there's fats. That's all there is. And I am not a macronutrient. I do not ever obsess about macronutrients. The only macronutrient that I pay any really attention to, honestly, is probably protein. I want to make sure, because I eat 90, I'm not 100% either. I'm probably 95% plant-based. And in part because I think it's just, I see people aspire to be 100%. Some people can do it, and that's awesome. But when they don't and they fail, I don't like perfect to be the enemy of good. That's just my personality. So I'm just more comfortable being in the 95% range personally. But, you know, I also don't have any disease process that I think I'm treating that would push me above that. All right. So I do look at protein and make sure I'm getting enough. But carbs, you know, there's carbs and there's carbs. There's proteins and there's proteins and there's fats and there's fats. We need to limit saturated fat. And unsaturated fats, you've heard omega-3s, probably omega-3 fats or polyunsaturated fatty acids. The unsaturated fats, which are predominantly found in plants, are good for us. There are some in salmon, well, and specifically wild-caught salmon, that are good for us. You don't have to get it from salmon, but it's a good, easy source to get it from. Carbs are, you know, there's carbs, there's table sugar, which is a carb, and there's you know, pick your crab, carrot, which is a carb. Those are very different things. If you're interested in this, and I almost hesitate to mention it to you because I don't want to throw you off so much, this would be an interesting journey for you. Carl mentioned Mastering Diabetes. Mastering Diabetes is would be an interesting book, I think, maybe for you to read, just to consider it. Because the two guys who started that company, both good friends of mine, are type 1 diabetics, and would advocate that the problem with diabetes is in the carbs, which is not what you hear. The problem with diabetes is the fat, which is gumming up the insulin receptors, in, predominantly in the muscles, but also in the liver. And it is causing the insulin not to work as well as it could, because it's being, the fat just gums up the works. And you get rid of the fat, low-fat diet, you free up those insulin receptors for the insulin to bind to the receptor and open up those glucose channels for the glucose, the blood sugar, to come from the bloodstream into the cells as it should. So that's a long question. We had, you know, I'm going to take that off to the side. I'm happy to talk to you more about it. The big question I think has better, broader applicability to the group here probably is the question around local farm raised, what kind of meats should we be eating if we're eating them? I agree with you that it makes a big difference. I think that the factory farmed foods, and there's lots of data, whether it's fish, poultry, pork, or beef are not what we should be eating. They're laden with antibiotics and different chemicals, and they are low quality compared to what you can get. And you're fortunate that you live where you live, or because I assume you live around here, that you're getting, you know, you can get your meats from Hickory Nut Gaff. You can get your salmon from Heidi, who does, I can't remember what she's called her. She sells
Wild Alaskan.
Yeah, Wild Alaskan. Yeah. So it's fresh caught salmon. And it makes a big difference. And I guess you can do the same thing with chickens. So know your farmer. Especially if you're going to eat animal protein, you better know where that animal was raised and not fed a bunch of junk. Because whatever it was eating is what you're going to be eating.
I have a question. If you have a blood clot and you're off your medicine and you're doing well, will your veins ever be strong enough to carry that blood back up without having compression stopping you? I mean, if you're exercising and you're, you know, doing what you can?
Maybe. You know, when you had a blood clot, it depends on how bad the vein was destroyed. But if the vein was just so stressed out that it can never regain its function, you may not be able to do enough physical activity. It's just using the leg vein we're talking about. You may not be able to do enough physical activity to offset the effects of gravity that are, you know, this vein is dilated. You can exercise to try to pump it up, but maybe the veins, when you're pumping up, there's veins in, or valves in your veins. So picture a tube with valves that only allow the blood to travel back to your heart. If that valve has been stressed out to the point where, I mean, it was meeting like this, and now you stressed it out, and it's doing this, it's not going to work. And so you may not be happy with the answer, but I think that you can try it and see and do a lot more. But a recumbent bike or something might be better than standing, because you're just going to be pushing it up and letting it come back down.
Dr. Aspinall, one last question. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Now that you're in this place in your life, what does your spiritual journey lead you to do what you do next?
So the question for you guys at back was, what does my spiritual journey lead me to do next? This is not a planted question, but this is an educated question. Put here in those. Physical health is interesting to me, but the meditation journey has been really interesting to me. That opened up a whole new appreciation for what this is all about. I had to share with you one-on-one. And it is, for me, no longer about chasing fame or fortune. It is about, it goes back to the energy. It is, what is it that makes me come alive? There's a quote by Howard Thurman. Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. And I love it. And so it is paying attention to what makes me come alive, and doing more of that. I envision, it's a little cloudy right now to me. I'm happy to do this program that Carl was asking about, the Thrive program. I'm happy to do that. I enjoy that work. But there's something out there that is sort of somehow related to getting the healthcare system is so broken. Instead of trying to fix it, I would more like to meet the immediate needs instead of trying to reverse the whole program. I mean, what is it that we're not getting? We're not getting access to doctors. We're not getting time with the doctors. We're not understanding what we're dealing with after meeting with the doctors, or I should say providers. I'm old fashioned. And so what if we got a group of, and I'm just thinking, you know, Western North Carolina, maybe we'll grow. But in Western North Carolina, what if we got a group of doctors together? I'm happy to be a cardiologist. We need an endocrinologist. We need a rheumatologist. They're really hard to get into. We need a neurologist, an oncologist. We need all the ologists. And what if we got them all together and said, guys, ladies and gentlemen, what if we started, I don't know what it looks like, I don't care about this part, but, you know, it's probably a nonprofit. Oops. What if we got the people with time, semi-retired or retired, and still licensed people together? It could be, and it would include nurses, not just docs, but nurses and physical therapists and all the healthcare providers, and said, we're available to you for free. I don't know if everybody, all the providers are going to say, I can't wait to sign up with you. But what if we could do that and said, you know, not all the time. I mean, what I love the most is 4 or 5 hours a week having conversations with patients about their health and seeing the light bulb come on, and finally they get it. And now I know that they're going to be successful. They're going to understand it. They're going to be able to talk to their doctor about it. And it's just a beautiful exchange to have that moment with the patient and see them say, thank you, I understand. And it's just awesome. It's an energetic thing. So if I could do that in some way going forward, I would love to do that. I don't know what it looks like yet, but that's what I feel like my soul calls me to do.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.